Chapter 14. 1322 Hours. The gunfire continued to crack and boom in the distance as Bald and Porter bolted down the stairs. They hit the second floor landing and paced down the corridor leading towards Soames's hotel room. There was no sign of Tully. Porter guessed he was still busy with Fisher sealing off the exits on the ground floor. He passed a loose line of 40 or so distraught-looking guests being escorted out of their rooms by the volunteers. They were led down the corridor towards the landing and the safety of the upper floors. Most of the guests left their rooms without complaint. A few kicked up a fuss with the volunteers, but they quickly shut up once they heard the sounds of the firefight raging in the distance. The air inside the hotel was stale and hot, and Porter could feel the sweat pasting his shirt to his skin. "I could murder a cold beer right now," he thought. "Christ, I can almost taste it on my lips." But the moment passed, and he focused his thoughts on the mission. Protect Soames. Protect the wanker who torpedoed my career. "All we've got to do is keep him away from the Russians for a few more hours," Porter told himself. "As soon as the evacuation is sorted, we'll get him on the first chopper out of the city and fly him home. Then it's job done, and I can get back on the Voddy. Unless the rebels kill us all first."
He swiped open the door to room 201 with the keycard Tannen had given him earlier. The door clicked open, and Porter swept inside, with Bald a step behind him. Tully's hooker sat on the edge of the bed, staring sullenly at her feet. Soames was pacing up and down in front of the balcony, wearing a trench line into the faded carpet. He stopped and looked up as the two operators entered.
"What the devil's going on out there?" he said.
"The rebels are assaulting the bridge," Porter answered. "Some of the Nigerians have fallen back to the cordon in front of the hotel. We don't know how long the others will hold out."
Soames looked startled.
"Shit. The rebels have never managed to get this close before."
"We don't have a lot of time," Porter said. "Get moving."
"Where are you taking me?"
"To a more secure room."
The ex-CO narrowed his eyes at Porter.
"Somewhere you can keep an eye on me," he sneered.
"It's for your own safety."
"I'm fine where I am. Anyway, I doubt we're in any serious trouble. The Nigerians won't abandon their positions. People like myself are too important to be left to the mercy of the rebels. President Fofana knows that. So do the Nigerians, I'm sure."
He stood his ground, smiling. Porter stared at him, his anger rising in his throat.
"This tosser might be a close mate of the Whitehall set, but he's not my fucking CO anymore. He's not pulling the strings now."
"It's not up for debate," he said. "You're moving rooms and that's the fucking end of it. Now go. Jock will show you to your room."
Soames stood still for a moment longer. Then he picked up his jacket and headed for the door, muttering under his breath. Bald followed him out of the room. Porter gestured to the hooker.
"You too, love. Hurry up."
The hooker watched the door for a few moments, waiting until she was certain Soames and Bald were out of earshot. Then she manoeuvred around the bed and approached Porter. For a fleeting moment, he thought she was going to make a pass at him. She must be desperate for business, he thought. Then he looked into her eyes and saw the fear in them.
"Please," she said. "I must get away. I can't stay here."
Porter shook his head.
"No one's allowed in or out of the hotel. Not until the rebels have cleared off."
The hooker took a step closer to Porter. Her lower lip was purpled and trembling, he realized.
"You must help me," she said. "You have to keep me away from him."
"From who?"
"Mr. Tully."
She paused and flashed an anxious glance at the door.
"He hurts me."
Porter hardened his expression.
"I can't help you."
She reached out and placed her hand on his.
"You don't understand. He used to slap some of the girls about. Everyone knows Mr. Tully likes it rough. But now it's worse. He chokes me. Sometimes he kicks me in the stomach and punches me in the face."
"Why haven't you left him?"
"I tried. He caught me before I could escape. Then he said he was going to teach me a lesson I wouldn't forget. He raped me twice. Then he told me he knew where my family lived, and if I tried to leave him again, he would find my brothers and sisters and kill them."
Tears rolled down the hooker's face. She looked away in shame. Porter listened in stunned silence. He remembered what Tully had told him earlier that day. You can do anything you want in these parts, anything at all. Bob Tully had always been unbalanced, even back in the regiment, but now the guy was running wild. Raping prostitutes and threatening to murder their families? Bob's losing the plot, Porter thought. What else is he capable of? He shrugged off the disturbing thought as the hooker stepped closer to him, close enough that he could smell her perfume, feel the warmth of her breath on his face. She looked at him with pleading eyes.
You have to save me from Mr. Tully, she said, reaching a hand down to Porter's groin. I can give you good time, better than any other woman. I make you happy.
Porter grabbed her hand by the wrist and pushed it away.
Maybe another time, love. Let's go.
You keep me from Mr. Tully?
I'll see what I can do.
That seemed to calm the hooker down. Porter led her out of the room, turned left and hurried down the corridor. Ahead of them, dozens of guests were being ushered towards the upper floors. Among the faces, Porter caught sight of Bald and Soames. They were pacing towards the stairwell leading down to the first floor. Porter quickened his stride and caught up with his mucker. He shoved the hooker towards Bald.
Here, he said. Take her and put her in one of the other rooms. Wherever there's space, I'll take Soames down to the storeroom.
Bald frowned at the prostitute. A question formed in his eyes, but then he simply shrugged, took the hooker by the wrist, and ushered her in the direction of the guests being led up towards the upper floors. Porter grabbed Soames by the shoulder and thrust him down the stairs leading down to the first floor.
You don't have to do this, Soames said. You can still do the right thing and let me go. Why would I do that? I can give you and Bald both a job.
Porter laughed.
I'm serious, Soames continued. You two did well to track me down after all. It can't have been an easy mission, especially with the situation outside. I'm always on the lookout for good men. Once this business with the RUF blows over, I'll need extra security for the mine. You could do well for yourselves. Very well indeed. If you think I'm taking orders from you again, you're fucking deluded. Don't be a fool all your life, man. Things are different on the circuit. Talk to your friend Tully if you don't believe me. Life here is dirt cheap. You get all the women and drink you want, whenever you want it. And the salary is competitive, extremely competitive. You'd be making a lot more money than you do working for some line manager over at Thames House.
They hit the first floor landing. Porter gritted his teeth, listening to Soames argue his case as they paced along the corridor.
Think about what I'm offering you. What happens if you take me back to London, eh? You'll just go back to being a grunt again, working for the firm for a pittance. That's no kind of existence for a good Hereford man. Let me go, and you and Jock Bald will live like kings. You have my word.
Porter still said nothing. Soames kept arguing with him as they marched towards a door at the far end of the corridor, giving him the hard sell.
Maybe Soames is right, the voice inside Porter's head said. Maybe you should walk away from the firm. What have they ever done for you?
For an instant, he was tempted to take up Soames on his offer. But then he remembered who he was dealing with.
You can't trust this guy, a second voice told him. You know what Soames is like. He's more slippery than a butcher's prick. He'll say anything to get what he wants. 5 minutes ago, Soames was slagging me off. Now he's offering me the job of a lifetime.
Which made Porter wonder,
why is my old CO so desperate to stay in Sierra Leone?
They arrived in front of the storeroom, an unmarked brown door situated midway down the corridor. Porter dug out the set of keys Crowder had given him. He tried a bunch of them until he found the one that unlocked the storeroom door. He pushed Soames into the room and flicked the light switch on. A single fluorescent bulb sputtered into life, casting weak light over the room and revealing a cramped space with bare breeze-block walls and shelves at the back piled high with cardboard boxes. There was a desk to the right of the storeroom and a dirty sink to the left with a toaster and a kettle. Several large bottles of industrial cleaning agents were stacked in a cabinet above the sink. Every surface was coated in about an inch of dust. Soames glanced around, wrinkled his face in disgust.
You're not going to leave me in here, surely?
I'll have someone bring you food and drink when the evening meal's ready, said Porter. As soon as the evacuation is underway, we'll come and fetch you. Until then, you'll stay here.
Soames's expression hardened.
You can't do this to me, Porter. Think about who you're dealing with. I've got friends, you know. They won't be pleased when they find out how you're treating me.
Porter shook his head.
I don't give a crap what your mates think. Right now, all I care about is keeping us alive.
What if I need to go to the bathroom?
Piss in the sink.
Porter pulled the door shut, then twisted the key, locking Soames inside. The guy shouted obscenities through the door as Porter made his way back down the corridor towards the main landing. Ahead of him, Bald trotted down the stairs from the upper floors. He marched over to Porter, nodded at his mucker.
That's the night fighter sorted. What now?
Now we sit tight and wait, said Porter.
And pray that the evacuation team gets here in time. The afternoon passed in a frenzied blur. Bald and Porter regrouped with Tully in the lobby, and the three men did a quick recce of the exit and entry points on the ground floor, checking that each one had been securely boarded up. They took a brief detour into the underground car park to check that the metal shutters had been lowered over the exit and all the service doors were blocked. Once they were satisfied the hotel had been sealed off, they beat a path to the manager's office and made photocopies of the map Bald had drawn up indicating the fire points on each floor. Crowder handed the copies to his staff and ordered them to be distributed to the volunteers so that everyone would know where to go in the event of a fire breaking out. Out in the lobby, the hotel staff and volunteers were like an army of termites, boosting furniture from the lounge and carrying it across to the back of the ground floor restaurant, blocking the windows and doors overlooking the grounds to the rear of the hotel, rendering the weak points in the structure impassable. Others carried fire extinguishers upstairs or lugged up boxes of non-perishable goods in case the enemy breached the lower floors and the guests found themselves cut off from the food supplies stored in the kitchen. Porter, Bald, and Tully supervised the operation. Tannen had set up shop in the back office, putting in regular calls to her superiors, demanding updates on the evacuation. Only the 12 Lebanese refused to help. They hung around in the corner of the lobby, smoking foul-smelling cigarettes and nervously watching the Nigerian troops. For the rest of the afternoon, Bald and Porter alternated between keeping an eye on the situation outside through the lower floor windows and checking in with Tannen for any new information. Porter also periodically checked in on the sat phone to see if Hawkridge had tried to reach out to them. But he heard nothing. At least battery life wasn't an issue. Tannen had managed to source a spare satellite phone charger from a staffer at the Dutch embassy, allowing Porter to keep the unit plugged in on a side desk in the back office. Sporadic bursts of gunfire continued to ripple across the peninsula as the day wore on. Bald, Porter, and Tully did a quick recce of the rooftop to try and get a better view of the situation to the east. By now, several plumes of jet-black smoke were drifting lazily up into the sky from the direction of the Aberdeen Road Bridge, as the gun battle there continued to rage. A steady trickle of wounded Nigerians staggered back towards the hotel from the bridge, and Porter privately feared that the remaining troops would abandon their position before long. Once the main body of enemy soldiers had broken through, there would be nothing to stop them attacking the hotel, he knew. The gunfire ceased sometime around dusk. The distant crack of rifle reports faded as the dying embers of sunlight burnt themselves out on the horizon. Like a cigarette being stubbed out in a giant ashtray. Then the sky went dark, and the streets of Freetown were soon filled with wild cheers and the booming thud-thud of gangster rap as the rebels celebrated another day's looting. After the final roster of guests had taken their evening meal and returned to their rooms, Porter divided the staff into groups of six and detailed them to take turns on the night watch. They would work in three-hour shifts throughout the night, making sure the landings were empty and looking for any signs of a potential breach by the enemy. Then Porter left to have a drink. He crossed the litter-strewn lobby, glancing outside as he made for the bar adjacent to the hotel restaurant. Through the double doors at the front of the hotel, he could see the Nigerian troops on stag at the end of the drive. They were sitting around in small groups and smoking cigarettes, their belt kits off and their guns resting on their laps. They didn't exactly look like a determined force to Porter. There's not a good fighter amongst them, he thought. The bar doors were closed but unlocked. Someone had turned the lights off, but Porter could see several bottles of spirits on a rack behind the bar. He breezed past the tables and chairs and made a beeline for the counter. Most of the good stuff had already been cleared out by thirsty punters, but there was a bottle of Absolut vodka hidden behind a couple of flagons of empty Coban Special Reserve port. Porter grabbed the vodka bottle and slumped down in a chair at the nearest table. Then he unscrewed the cap and took a long pull straight from the bottle. His first sip in almost 24 hours. The liquid slicked down his throat and flowed into his veins, dulling his nerve endings. A warm glow washed over him. Sweet Jesus, but that felt good. He felt a sudden wave of tiredness wash over him. Porter glanced at his watch and realized it had been well over 2 days since he'd had a decent night's kip. For the past several hours, he'd been running on fumes, and now the stress and exhaustion came rushing back at him with a vengeance. His eyelids felt heavy, as if someone had sewn hockey pucks into them. A kind of dull fog settled behind his eyeballs. He closed his eyes for a moment and sighed.
"Mind if I join you?"
Porter looked up and saw Tannen standing a few feet away. She had removed her jacket and rolled up the sleeves on her crinkled white blouse. Strands of her brown hair clung to the slender lines of her face. The deputy commissioner looked stressed, Porter thought.
"I know the feeling."
He nodded at the bar.
"Help yourself."
"Free bar," she said. "The best kind."
She sauntered over to the bar, grabbed a glass from the rack under the counter, and slid down into the chair opposite Porter, poured herself a double measure of the Absolut, and tipped it down her throat in one gulp.
"Either she's a heavy drinker," thought Porter, "or she's even more worried about the situation than she's letting on."
"How long do you think we've got?"
she asked, setting her glass down. Porter shrugged, then took another hit from the bottle.
"Not long. My guess is the rebels will have another crack at the bridge first thing tomorrow. Strike while morale is low with the Nigerians. It won't take them long to smash through. We've got 24 hours at the most. Probably less."
Tannen poured herself another slug of vodka.
"Let's hope you're wrong. I just got off the phone with the commissioner. Seems like Downing Street finally understands how serious the situation is. The evacuation's been set for tomorrow afternoon. We're still waiting for an exact time. It'll be a joint US-British operation. Details are scant, but we'll brief the guests in the morning."
She looked up from her drink, smiled nervously. Her eyes were half filled with hope and half with fear.
"You think we'll make it?"
"It'll be close," Porter said. "But I've survived worse."
Tannen sipped at her drink.
"I guess you'll be leaving on the first chopper."
Porter nodded.
"We've got our orders. What about you?"
"I'll be flying to Conakry with the Commissioner to meet with President Fofana. We'll return here as soon as it's safe. Downing Street wants us to take the lead in negotiating a truce with the rebels."
"Won't work. Never does when you're dealing with scum like this lot. Trust me, love, the only language they understand is bullets."
"It's different this time."
"How do you mean?"
"The rebels have the people on their side now. In the past, they didn't have much in the way of public support. It was mostly a bunch of self-interested army officers looking to make a name for themselves. This time, the rebels have the sympathy of a large number of people in the south of the country. If the president comes down hard on them, he'll lose the next election."
"I thought the locals were terrified of the rebels," Porter said.
"They are, but they're also angry with the president because of the missing children."
Porter frowned.
"What missing kids?"
"Haven't you heard?"
Tannen saw the puzzled look on his face and went on.
"Hundreds of children have gone missing in Sierra Leone in the past year, mostly from the poorer villages and farms to the south. At first, everyone assumed they'd been abducted by the West Side boys."
"Makes sense. They're the ones recruiting all the child soldiers.
Right, except for two things. One, the kids going missing are too young, even for the West Side boys. We're talking about 6 and 7-year-olds. Kids that age aren't old enough to hold a rifle properly, let alone use it.
What's the second thing?
Not long after the disappearances, Fofana's men captured one of the West Side boys' commanders. He confessed to a bunch of stuff, but he swore blind his men hadn't abducted these kids.
So who took them?
We don't know. But whoever's responsible, it's got the locals pretty worked up. They think Fofana isn't doing enough to find the missing children. Some of them even formed a pressure group here in Freetown to petition the president, Mothers of the Lost Children.
Porter nodded.
I've seen the posters.
The mothers have caused quite a stir. The rebels took advantage of the public anger and advanced on the city. The president is on the brink, and they smell blood. The only way Fofana will survive is if he can form a truce with the rebels and put an end to the bloodshed. But it's going to be tough. The rebel chiefs won't agree to a ceasefire until the president cuts his ties with Soames.
Will he?
Tannen laughed and shook her head.
He can't. Fofana needs Soames for his political comeback.
Because Soames protects the mines?
Correct. Without control of the diamond fields, Fofana is a lame duck. Besides, Soames has the political connections in Westminster to make things happen. Securing foreign investment, that sort of thing. Without Soames, the money dries up.
Is that why Angela March has had you keeping tabs on Soames?
Tannen nodded.
Whitehall is worried about blowback.
Against the president?
Tannen nodded.
Some people at the FO are concerned that Soames isn't exactly clean, Angela included.
The diamond smuggling. Hawkridge and your friend Angela told us during the briefing.
The rumours have been floating around for a while. Angela was concerned that if Soames got caught with his hand in the till, it would reflect badly on the president and strengthen the rebels' hand. We can't afford any scandals, not if we want to keep Fofana in power, obviously. So I looked into it.
Did you find anything?
I tried, but I couldn't get close to the diamond mines. Soames has got a tight security presence there, which struck me as odd.
We're talking about a diamond mine in the middle of the most dangerous country in Africa. Security in these places is tighter than a nun's snatch.
This is different. The mine makes Fort Knox look like a branch of Abbey National. I'm telling you, Soames has got something hidden there. Something big.
She paused.
And then there's unannounced visits,
Porter said.
What visits?
In the past several months, a number of prominent military personnel and politicians have made unscheduled trips to the mine. We're not sure, but we think they might be checking on something.
Such as?
We don't know.
Porter said nothing. He thought back to the conversation with Hawkridge after they had found the murdered Russian in Soames's office, remembered the MI5 agent telling him the rumours about Soames stealing diamonds from the mine and selling them on to dodgy fences for a profit. Nothing has been proven, Hawkridge had said.
But I know Soames, Porter thought. I know how the bastard's mind works. He doesn't care about money. He's already minted. All he gives a toss about is climbing the greasy pole, getting a knighthood, and the lifestyle that goes with it. The parties with the super-rich on their yachts in Monte Carlo, the weekend invites to checkers, chumming up to media tycoons and future prime ministers. But if he's not smuggling diamonds, then what the fuck is he up to?
He forgot about all this as Tannen knocked back the rest of her drink. She brushed a strand of hair behind her ear and smiled at Porter, shyly at first, the hint of a smile rather than the full thing. It carried the promise of something more than a smile, somewhere down the line. Then she leaned across the table and pecked Porter on the cheek. He caught the scent of her skin as she leaned over and felt something hot stir in his blood. He wondered if Tannen was coming on to him.
Bloody hell, I might actually be in here.
Thank you,
Tannen said as she straightened up. She smiled more fully at him now, the booze breaking down her anxieties.
For everything that you've done for us today.
Porter took another swig of vodka, then waved a hand at her.
Don't thank me yet. We've still got to get through tomorrow first.
Tannen poured herself another shot and downed it, giving herself more confidence. Then she broke out the full smile. It was less like a smile and more like an invitation. She wet her lips and ran her finger around the rim of the shot glass.
I might not see you after tomorrow, she said. I wish there was some way I could thank you.
Porter sat dumbfounded. He could hardly believe what he was hearing.
It had been a long while since he'd had a woman. His last shag had been a drunken fumble in the dark with an Irish waitress with a face like a bag of ferrets. Porter had simply assumed his days as a bedroom warrior were behind him. Nowadays, most women ignored him, or worse, took pity on him. They could smell the moss on his dick from a mile away. Here we are, in the middle of a war zone, and this bird is gagging for it.
Tannen leaned in closer to Porter, lowered her voice to a whisper.
You know, I've got a room to myself on the fourth floor. Crowder insisted. There's a fully stocked minibar in there too. How about you and I take this party upstairs?
He didn't need a second invitation. He set down the vodka bottle and shot to his feet. Tannen slid out of her chair, turned on her heels, and sauntered out of the bar, her wide hips swaying hypnotically from side to side. Porter stared at her cracking ass, grinning widely, as he followed her out into the lobby. He could hardly believe his luck.
5 minutes ago, I was going to spend the night with a bottle drinking myself into oblivion. Now I'm in with a chance of shagging the deputy commissioner, someone with direct access to a minister in the Foreign Office.
He smiled to himself as he imagined the look on Jock Bald's face when he found out he'd spent the night with Tannen. He felt his heart pounding with anticipation as he followed the deputy commissioner into her room. Porter glanced around the room while Tannen kicked off her shoes and retrieved a couple of miniatures from the minibar. The double mattress had been propped against the window and the rest of the furniture shoved against the wall. A makeshift bundle of pillows and duvet covers lay on the floor next to the bedside table. There were several bottles of prescription pills arranged on the table, Porter noticed. He read the labels: Zoloft, Xanax, and a generic brand of sleeping tablets.
For my anxiety,
Tannen said as she wandered back over to Porter, clutching a pair of Jim Beam miniatures.
I get panic attacks sometimes.
Porter tipped his head at the miniatures.
Should you be mixing that stuff with all them pills?
It's no big deal. I'm used to it by now. Besides, you're hardly one to talk. The amount you drink, you should be dead by now.
Who told you that?
Don't look so surprised. Angela sent me your file. It was all in there.
She handed one of the miniatures to Porter and unscrewed the cap on the other. Then they sat on the bed frame side by side, her long legs touching against his thighs as they sipped at their drinks.
What happened to your hand?
Tannen asked, pointing to the two stumps where his index and middle fingers had once been.
We were on an op in Beirut. Me and some other lads were sent in to rescue a British businessman being held hostage there. Things got noisy. I took a round from one of the guards.
Tannen reached down and touched the stumps.
I'm sorry, she said softly.
Porter shrugged.
I got off lightly. 3 regiment lads died that day.
What happened?
There was a kid. He was one of the guards.
Porter knocked back half the miniature before continuing.
I remember his face even now. He must have been 13 or so. I knocked him out cold during the mission. A blow from a bloke my size, the kid should have stayed down. But he didn't. He got back to his feet as we were bugging out and dropped 3 of the lads. If I'd slotted the kid, those 3 lads would still be alive.
How long ago was this?
11 years. Back in 89, not long after I passed selection.
Porter fell silent and stared down at his drink.
There's not a day goes by that I don't think about those 3 lads.
Tannen took her hand and placed it on top of Porter's.
You can't blame yourself for what happened.
Porter looked her in the eye.
I did what I did. There are no easy decisions in a battle. If I'd shot the kid, I would have broken the Geneva Convention, and I'd probably be rotting in a prison cell right now. I made my choice and paid the price for it. A heavy price. But I can't forgive Soames.
Why? What did he do?
He was the CO of the regiment at the time. He blamed me for the Beirut op. What happened to me could have happened to any of the lads at Hereford, but Soames didn't see it that way. As far as he was concerned, I'd flunked the op and made him look bad. He needed a scapegoat. So he hung me out to dry. I went from being on the fast track to being thrown on the scrap heap.
He ruined your career, Tannen said. That's why you hate him?
Porter nodded. I wasn't the best operator in the regiment, far from it, but I was a decent soldier, and I had a good future ahead of me. I've got blood on my hands, and that's on me. But Soames wrecked my career over it. He should have had my back. Instead, he blackballed me just to cover his own arse. That bastard was more concerned with looking good in front of the top brass than losing three of his men. Now everyone thinks he's a bloody hero.
Tannen traced her fingers up the tight, knotted muscles of his arm.
It can't be easy, having to protect Soames after all that's gone on between you in the past.
I didn't have a choice. The firm sent us out here. And your mate Angela over at the Foreign Office. Seems Soames has got half of Whitehall under his thumb.
Tannen frowned. How come you're working for Angela anyway? I didn't know the SAS was in the habit of working with the Foreign Office.
We're not, Porter shook his head. We're on secondment to the firm. We did a job for them a year ago, and they decided to keep us on. Been working for them ever since. They're the ones who brought Angela on board.
He looked up at Tannen.
What about you? How did you end up here?
Tannen teased a wry smile out of the corner of her mouth.
Sometimes I ask myself that very question. I come from a military family. Dad was an officer in the Coldstream Guards. My granddad fought in Sicily with one para. I followed the family tradition and joined the 1st Military Intelligence Battalion. Did 4 years, then left to join the Foreign Office and got posted here. Needless to say, Daddy wasn't very happy about it. He always thought I'd marry some rich bloke in the city, settle down and pop out a couple of kids. But that was never what I wanted.
What did you want? Porter asked.
Adventure. A chance to see the world.
She lowered her eyes.
I guess, at some level, I wanted to prove my father wrong, show him I was capable of being more than just a stay-at-home mum.
She looked up and shrugged.
Guess I have unresolved daddy issues.
I'm sure he'd be proud,
Porter said, because he felt he had to say something. The awkward silence was punctured by another distant burst of gunfire. Tannen glanced at the window as the sounds of the rebels cheering and whooping carried across the night sky.
Do you think we'll make it through tomorrow?
She asked, looking back to Porter.
I don't know, but I can promise you two things. If the rebels have a crack at us, me and Jock will give them the fight of their lives. The fuckers won't know what's hit them.
What's the second thing?
Porter smiled weakly.
Once this is over, Soames will probably get a bloody medal. That wanker's like Tefal. Nothing sticks to him. He always comes out smelling of roses.
Tannen went quiet for a beat. Then she looked deep into his eyes and said,
I don't care about Soames and his medals. I know who the real hero is.
She leaned over and kissed him, hard. It was the kind of long, feverish kiss that left them both breathless and trembling as they sought out each other's tongues. Then they were tearing each other's clothes off. Porter ripped open her blouse and unlatched her bra with his big, clumsy fingers. Her small, pert breasts popped out. Porter cupped a hand to one, drawing a moan of pleasure from Tannen. Then she drew back, making noisy inhalations, as she stood up from the bed frame and took Porter by the hand and moved over to the bed. She peeled off his shirt, paused when she caught sight of the scars on his chest, then pulled him close, socketing her groin to his. Porter felt the warmth of her breasts flattened against his bare chest as he kissed her pale neck.
"Fuck me," she gasped. "Fuck me hard."
Tannen slid her hand down to his crotch and unbuttoned his khakis. Then she reached around to the back of her pencil skirt and pulled down the slip, letting the material slide down the length of her smooth legs. For a moment Porter just stood there, his head spinning as he admired her stunning figure. She wasn't just pretty. She was transformed. A totally different woman from the awkward, shy creature he'd first met in the hotel lobby. Tannen had the kind of body that looked better naked than clothed. She had wide, curved hips and powerful thighs and a flat, smooth belly. She was lean, but not skinny, slender, but not bony. The kind of woman who took care of herself, but knew how to have fun as well. Porter grinned.
"Just wait until Jock Bald hears about this," he thought again as he watched Tannen slink out of her black lace knickers.
She smiled at him with moist lips and a sweet, playful look in her eyes.
"Well," she said, "what are you waiting for?"
Porter grinned. He forgot about his mucker. He forgot about the booze and the mission and Soames and the rest of it.
"This time tomorrow we might all be dead, so I may as well enjoy tonight."
He pulled Tannen tight and clamped his hands around her firm buttocks and kissed her like it might be the last kiss he ever had.